During the Drashot Taran, we're up to page Kuf Hey in the Machon Shalem edition, Reish Lamed Zayin in the Mosad of Kuk edition. The point that he's been illustrating is that at the root of everything is where is a person's heart, where is a person's intent. And we discussed the balance in this approach, that of course a person is responsible for 613 mitzvot, but we have to realize that our heart plays a huge role in the level of the performance of each of those mitzvot. So it follows that if two people do the exact same action, yet one of them will get wages, will get reward that is far greater than the other one. You can't even compare. Because one of them does that action without any intent, and he figures, no, if it doesn't help, it doesn't hurt. Yes?
Is it better to cover more ground with less kavana, or less ground with more kavana?
It depends on what area. If you're talking about not eating non-kosher, if you're... So in tefillah specifically, there's the minimum of Shmona Esrei Birchos Kriya Shema, and there's also the idea that it says in Shulchan Aruch, Tov Me'at BeKavana Me'obot BeLo Kavana. Better say less Hallelukas with a lot of Kavana than more with less Kavana. Yeah? So in tefillah it says it. It's Halacha in Shulchan Aruch. Okay, so this goes back to our discussion last night about Pascal's wager. That sometimes we approach mitzvahs like this. Well, it won't hurt. If it won't help, it won't hurt. It's not the end of the world. Maybe there is a God, maybe there isn't a God. But no. Okay. So he says you have two people. They both put on tzitzis in the morning. They both put on tefillin in the morning. And one thinks, I have a mitzvah, I'm doing what Hashem wants. Another one thinks, Jewish society. Okay, I'm a part. I'm playing the roles. But the other one does it with complete intent. And this is what the verse in Isaiah is alluding to, when the verse says, on that day, the remnant of Israel will no longer lean on those that hid him, but rather they will lean on Hashem, the Holy One of Israel, in truth. What does it mean that he leans on Hashem in truth? How do you know who leans on him in truth? That's a person who serves Hashem with full intent, and he, what Ran calls, nichnas be'ovi akora, he comes out under the burden of the load, meaning sometimes you have a beam that's collapsing, and you see the roof is going to collapse. So everyone comes to support the beam. But some people are putting a hand on it, thinking how they're going to get out the door. And then you have the people who come and grab the beam, and they put everything they got under it. That's called nichnas be'ovi akora. He's coming in under the weight of the beam. So those are two approaches in the service of Hashem. Is a person coming in under the weight of the beam, or is a person like thinking of the way out?
B'chol ma she'yaseh ha'maaseh yoter rachok min ha'teva, yoreh le'yoto nishan l'Hashem yitbarach be'emet.
And here we come to a point which I basically dumped the girl over this point. But it was a lacking in me, meaning I couldn't swallow it. We were discussing, how do you connect to Hashem? And she said, well, the more unnatural and difficult something is, the more you connect to Hashem. I said, goodbye. but that doesn't mean she was wrong. She meant to say that you connect to Hashem through sacrifice. You connect to Hashem when you do something even though you don't want to do it and it doesn't seem right to you. So where I was holding then, I was still trying to connect to Hashem when things seemed right to me. That was hard enough. But the truth is that there's truth to what she said. Yeah, 100%. I'm saying I wasn't there yet. But she was. Good for her. Okay. The Ran over here is saying, kol ma she'yaseh ha'maaseh yoter rachok min ha'teva, the more something is unnatural, the more you're adopting it shows that you're really accepting what Hashem says. Look at Avraham Avinu. What's more unnatural than to leave his father's house, to offer his own son after he's been preaching his whole life against sacrificing children? Now Hashem tells him, you go do that. It's the most unnatural thing in the world. It's unnatural for any parent.
I know it's unnatural.
Oh, so they must really be connected to Hashem. Very good. והמעשה היותר גדול והיותר רחוק מהטבע הוא מה שעשה אברהם אבינו עליו השלום בעקדת יצחק. And the greatest act that really comes in conflict with our nature is what Avraham Avinu did in binding his son. כאילו היה נמשך עונש כלל אם לא יקדנו. And here the Ran throws his bombshell. This is the famous understanding of the Ran, that if Avraham would have said to God, no thanks, he wouldn't have been punished. Because Hashem didn't order him to do it. So Hashem set him up in the most difficult situation. Hashem says, Yitzchak's your future, he's your seed. And then Hashem says, God says, could you please take your son? When Hashem says, please, could you please, what Hashem is saying is, you don't have to. And that's already known that Hashem wasn't commanding. The term kachna is a request. What Hashem was saying, at least to Avram's ears, was, would you please forgive me and let me go back on my promise and you go bind your son? That's why Hashem said, please. Meaning Hashem said, I know you could answer me. I know you could tell me, but you promised. And then I'll say, you're right, fine. That's why I say, please. Oh, no. Who said Yitzchak didn't know that?
You didn't have to do it, but okay, you'll kill me anyway.
Okay, so in a minute we'll discuss that. Velu haya Avram meshivo, hen li lo natata zara ki im ze. And if Avram would have answered, but you didn't give me any other children but this one, ve'vtechtani bo, ech esezen, you promised me he's my future, how could I do that? That wouldn't have been a sin, and he wouldn't have been punished for it. And even so, out of the great love for Hashem, blessed be He, he found it in his heart to bind him so that he does the will of Hashem alone. And even though he wouldn't have been punished had he not done it. And this, says the Ran, is the idea of the binding, and this is the secret. Wait, I know you're ready to be up at arms. Why do that? Maybe you should say no. What about Yitzchak? Took me about 12 years to digest this Ran. I first learned this Ran about 12 years ago, maybe a little bit more. And we have to understand this with many introductions. So let's begin. When we look at the world, so ordinarily our view revolves around, what do I want? That's the first approach we take to everything. It's natural, it's important. Im eina nili, nili. If I'm not going to fight for myself, no one else will. If I don't get out of bed and get myself breakfast, well, no one's bringing that breakfast to bed for me. If I don't go out and fight for myself, no one else will. So that's an important part of life. But as we grow, so then we learn that we can do more than that, and that there's more to life than thinking about ourselves. Now, it's very hard, because we are always tempted to think back and say, but he may not nili mili, but if I'm not going to fight for myself, who will? And we have to realize that's a temptation, because in fact, we can be a balanced person living im eina nili mili, and still be very focused. Uchshani la'atzmi ma'ani. But if all my life revolves around me, then I have to realize my life was not worth living. Then I've lived the life like a dog or a cat or any other animal on the planet because I've been focused on just sustaining myself. So obviously there's more to life than that. Step one, okay? That's the base level. I can't be only about myself. I have to be also about something else. I need to be about myself. But if I'm only about myself, then life wasn't worth living. So Mother Teresa thought she invented this line. But really it's the Mishnah and Pirkei Avos, right? Mother Teresa said, only a life lived for others is one worth living, right? So that's really the Mishnah and Pirkei Avos. Good for her. Im ein ani li mi li. On the one hand, I have to take care of myself, so the Mishnah and Avos gives us that balance. Not exactly like she said, only a life lived for others, no. But, uchshani la'atzmi, but if it's only lived for me, then mani, what was I worth? What was my whole living worth? That's step one. But there's a next step. And the next step is where a person can start asking himself, well, why am I here? It's not only the idea that my life wasn't worth living if I only lived for myself. It's the next question. Okay, so I have to be here for other people or for the service of Hashem. But then the next question is, well, what's the focus? What's my main job here? And here, we stand with a tremendous temptation. Meaning, to live the life of the Mishnah, that's something which can be pretty amenable to a person. Fine, I donate to the Red Cross. I volunteer with earthquake survivors out in Japan, and I live the rest of my life with my pool and my surround sound and my iPhone, and I can balance the two. But there is a next step. There is a next level where a person says, wait a second, but what's the point of life? And that's a level that we stay away from, because that would be too obligating. Wait a second. When I was a teenager, they used to ask me, where are you headed? So I used to say, don't know if I'm going to be Orthodox or not. Don't know if I'm going to be observant or not, but I know I want a big pool in my backyard. So that was in ninth grade and 10th grade. And I said, you know, Judaism remains to be seen. But the Gashmias, I knew where I wanted to go. Okay, then you grow up a little bit and you start asking yourself, wait a second, is that really what I want in life? Is that really what I should want in life? But very often, we're very tempted to remain at that stage of imein ani li mili uchshani la'atzmi ma'ani. Let me just stay at that. I'll be a good Jew. I'll do my thing. And I'll pay my dues in shul. I'll be a good parent. Gamarnu, let me be. But the giants in Jewish history were those who wanted to go the step beyond that. And the step beyond that is the step where a person starts working towards a life that is in sync with what Hashem wants. Not only with my fulfilling my minimum obligation. Now that's a totally different level of living. It's a totally different concept. And it's not easy. Because at the end of the day, I'm still human. I still have what I want. As we discussed the Medrash, that when Avraham Avinu is binding Yitzchak, Yaakov Avinu's crying, there are tears rolling down his cheek. Yitzchak Avinu's crying. There might be Simcha Balev. In the heart, he could be happy. He's living out what Hashem wanted, but he's still human. Avraham Avinu was superhuman, but he was human. And if he wouldn't be human, then it wouldn't be a Chachma. If he'd be retarded, if he didn't have feelings, then big deal that he bound his son. So a lot of cruel people do cruel things. There are people that murder their kids every day. Not every day, Baruch Hashem, but we hear about it pretty often. So the greatness of Avraham Avinu was that he was normal. The greatness of Avraham Avinu was that he did have feeling. The greatness of Avraham Avinu is that he did not want to do the Akedah on the surface level. But the greatness of Avraham Avinu was that he wanted to live his life in sync with what Hashem wants. Now that's a different level than saying, let me do what I have to do. And then when Hashem comes and says, please, what Hashem is saying is, you have a way out. Now it's up to you. That's a much harder test. Tell me I have to. Tell me this is what I must do. Okay? So then even an im ein ani li mili person can deal with that. Tell me, please, and leave me the way out, where I could say, no, so I won't be the biggest tzaddik. I love you, Hashem, but I'm also entitled to love my kid. I do love my kid. And that's where Hashem put him. So there, Avraham Avinu was given the opportunity to rise to the occasion, to say, my whole life is going to be in sync with what you want, Hashem, with what you want, even when you leave me a way out. And we will find in our own lives, you should know the halacha has areas where the halacha says you're not forced to do this. There are areas where the halacha says you want to do it, you're doing a mitzvah. You don't want to do it, you don't have to do it. Not every mitzvah is obligatory. Not every mitzvah does the Torah demand, stop what you're doing and go do that. And there are many examples to that. The simplest example, which is most relevant, is when a person decides how much money does he have to make. How much time is he going to invest in earning money, and how much time is he going to invest in Torah and mitzvahs? So there's a realm that's mutter, meaning obviously Bill Gates, according to halacha, should really be retiring and helping out the poor and doing positive things with his money. There's no justification for his being out there unless he'll convince me that he's developing the computer that's going to be the great brain surgeon and the great heart surgeon and everything else. I don't see what he's really doing to better society right now. Maybe I'm missing something, but I don't see it. Again, I might be missing something. I don't know enough about technology. Maybe you'll be able to sell me that there is something he's doing out there that's important for society.
Bill Gates is not part of Microsoft anymore.
Ah, really?
Yeah.
Ah, good for him. Okay, so you see. Oh. I haven't seen funding coming in. Okay. So, at any rate, that's a level we're supposed to aspire to. And that's Avraham Avinu's level. That level of being in sync. And it takes work. And it takes work to even appreciate that level. Meaning, it's very normal if when a person hears this, he says, leave me alone. Okay, say that. But we should appreciate that's a level to get to. Yeah.
So
the Medrash says that Yitzchak was consulted. And as far as Sarah, that deserves a class in its own. You're right, it's a worthwhile point. But that deserves its own class.
Yeah. You're like 30 years old. Mm-hmm.
Okay.